Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host as we walk through what was an incredibly dramatic Wednesday night in the Champions League as the final four teams booked their spots in the round of 16. It started in drama with an incredible Atalanta turnaround against Borussia Dortmund to make sure that a Serie A side was represented in that final 16. And it ended in drama as well with Juventus against Galatasaray going to extra time. An incredible comeback from Juve, but dreams ripped up by Victor Osimhen towards the end of that one. Incredible performance from Juve nonetheless. We'll get to both of those games and also to an emotional night at the Bernabeu as Real Madrid knocked out Benfica and PSG progress in an all-French affair. But by God, they made that one hard as well. I'm joined, as ever, by the wonderful Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, that was entertaining, wasn't it? Had to delay our record a little bit as Juve forced an attempted comeback. Well, they did manage a comeback, didn't they? Just didn't quite get it over the line in the end. But yeah, I thought that Real Madrid would be the standout game of the night, and you know it's still got its own drama, its own storylines, but the other three games certainly put up a fight for headline status. But look, at the end of the day, I am pleased with the outcome of Real Madrid game because it's Vinny's night, and I just wish Mourinho had been in the stadium. I just wish he'd have been on the sideline so that we could have got a bit more out of Vinny's winning goal as he runs over to the corner flag and does his dance. Now, we're led to believe that Mourinho actually watched this game in the Benfica bus in the car park. That's what the reports are saying. Obviously, suspended from the dugout for this game. Could have watched it in the stand, but didn't choose to do that. And apparently, yeah, watched it in the Benfica bus, even though there was a booth set up for him if he wanted to watch it inside the ground. Now,
this is ridiculous for what it's worth. Like, I've been a Mourinho apologist for the last couple of years. I went down on him last week, and I think that he's made a crucial error and really, really erred in terms of the way that he's behaved. But I don't like this. You know, the fact that we should be talking about Vinicius's night, the fact that he was the one that buried Benfica after everything that happened last week in Lisbon, and instead we're talking about Mourinho, and that's not a dig at you, that, you know, that's a storyline. Mourinho has made it a storyline about himself again. And this was not the moment for that. This was the moment to walk it back, show a little humility. And instead, he's the headline again.
He's the headline because he's not there. But the thing is, we wish he'd have been there just to see Vinny rubbing salt into his wounds. Like, Vinny deserved that moment as much as anyone. But I'm so glad that he still celebrated in the way he celebrates. Straight over to that corner flag as he stuck in the goal that sealed the tie. Dancing, brilliant to see. But, you know, over the course of the game, Benfica probably had Madrid's number. Benfica did well. Large spells of momentum in the game. I thought it was interesting because in the spells that Benfica actually went quiet in this game, it wasn't necessarily that they were becoming overwhelmed or outplayed. It felt more to me like they were using those periods to kind of reserve some energy, get some more back in the tank, and then go again and then burst. That's how it seemed that they played, and it almost worked for them. Obviously, they get off to a good start. Rafa Silva put some 1-0 up.
Was Rafa Silva, by the way?
Oh, he was great. Like, he was great.
Absolutely magical. 32 years old, still putting in performances like that. The old Stewart, the old warhorse. Really impressive performance from him, I thought.
Yeah, it definitely was. probably Benfica's man of the match, to be honest. But the lead only lasted for 2 minutes. That was a big problem. Tchouaméni manages to get Madrid back on equal terms. A lovely equaliser. Like the way he guides the ball into the corner of the net is lovely. And then it looks like Madrid take the lead. Arda Güler prods one home from close range, but ultimately that one's ruled out by VAR. Now, Thibaut Courtois has to get his praise here because he's still one of the best goalies in the world and proves it time and time again in big moments. And
yeah,
the save that he makes from Richard Rios is outstanding with the score at 1-1. Like, the way he gets down, he's already actually done well. On the first goal, Rafa Silva scores. Obviously,
Courtois makes the good save. It's going to be forgotten about, but that reaction stop from the Asensio, what would have been an Asensio own goal, is absolutely outrageous.
The reflex is amazing. But then the one from Rios that does count in the end because the ball doesn't end up in the net is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant from Courtois. So give him his flowers. Top stuff. Look, Benfica still keep going. Rafa Silva had another opportunity that ended up clipping the bar. And it was from that point, really, that you felt, right, this is it. We have entered a crucial stage of this game. And you felt things get a little bit more tense. You felt like every pass had a bit more pressure weighing on it. Pavlidis almost was able to take advantage of that when Tchouaméni was sloppy and gave the ball away. Rudiger made a very brave and good block after crashed into by Carreras. There was a moment when Asensio has to end up leaving the pitch on a stretcher as he clashes heads with Tchouaméni. It really was everybody putting their bodies on the line at this point, wasn't it, Jack? Like for the last 20 minutes, like it really was a case of like next goal wins. I know it quite that case, but like that's what it did feel.
Very end to end, didn't it?
Yeah, like it was that sort of moment. And then Madrid got their moment. The 80th minute, Valverde shows good strength in the middle of the field and very quickly gets the ball out of his feet to play Vinny in down the left channel. And Vinny kind of is opening his body up. It's all on his right foot. And as soon as he does open his body fully up, that far post is just waiting for the ball to ripple in the back of the net. It hits it. And there you go. It was perfect stuff for Vinny. It was a trademark Vinny finish. And yeah, as I say, all that was really missing was a camera being able to cross over to Mourinho to see what his reaction would have been in that moment. But there was no further reaction from Benfica. That was how the game played out. Real Madrid on a big European night, not the sort of a big European tie that they're used to, going through a playoff to even stay in the competition at this early phase in February. But nonetheless, we've talked many times across the years on this podcast that in the Champions League, when the going gets tough, they do deliver, and it's often Vinny that steps up, and it's happened again.
Yeah, I mean, look, big night for him in so many different ways, right? Like, obviously, with everything that weighed over him from last week, but also in terms of Kylian Mbappe being missing. And, you know, that's conflating an off-field issue with an on-field issue, and I appreciate that they're not the same thing. But I think that, you know, you put the kind of onus on his shoulders in so many ways tonight, and he delivers with the goal that ultimately ends up sealing it. And as you say, it's a lovely finish. It's a brilliant run. And there are a couple in the first half where he sort of nips into a gap and you think, oh, is this the moment it opens up for him? And he had to wait. He had to be incredibly patient. It wasn't a vintage performance, as you say, from Real Madrid. In the first half, I thought they were all over the place, especially from a defensive perspective. It felt like Alvaro Carreras was sort of marauding into the center of the park and leaving big gaps, and Camavinga having to sort of cover that left back area. It felt like they were almost positionless at times, that players were being asked to just sort of drift into the roles that they thought were best to occupy. And it gave them this really bizarre look. Sometimes that's a really good thing and teams are incredibly fluid and they work through the motions and no one knows who to mark. this wasn't like that. This felt like they were just all incredibly confused as to who they were supposed to be marking. Yeah. And Benfica tore them open time and time again in that first half. It took some, as you say, incredible Courtois goalkeeping, some last-ditch defending to keep them at bay. And you kind of thought that Real Madrid would come out firing on all cylinders in this game, considering the circumstances. Perhaps they were asked to kind of rein it in a little bit, to temper it and try and cool the game off, as opposed to going into it at full emotional capacity. And I can understand that to a degree. But I do think it's interesting that in that first half, a better side than Benfica, and that's not to take away from them from an on-pitch aspect, I thought they played very, very well tonight, mm-hmm. as they have done for the majority of these three games in a row that they've played against Real Madrid in the Champions League. They've been, you know, a very good side on the pitch. But I was surprised with how open Real Madrid were. And in recent games, it's kind of been the, can they find the goal? You know, when they've had moments in La Liga where they've slipped up, or in domestic matters at the very least. This felt very different in that they did feel wide open. And yes, they're missing players. I think they're missing Militao massively in the middle of their back line. But I was a little bit put out by the fact that they were really, really open, because, you know, in recent weeks, we've talked about this on the Patreon, but when they've played that midfield pivot of Tchouameni and Camavinga together, they haven't looked all that creative in the middle of the park. But you actually thought, okay, that's a very solid foundation from which you can build. And it allows the players further up the pitch who have that magic in their boots to be able to find those moments. It didn't really come across that way at all, I thought, in the performance this evening.
Yeah, I see there's some quotes from Arbeloa talking about the game and how it panned out. And he was asked about the deep blocks that Madrid are having to face and that they're struggling with it. And he says, it's hard for any team to face deep blocks. It's not just us. You know, talking about how difficult those things are to break down and closing up small spaces.
But I didn't feel like Benfica played with a deep block.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously been asked about it, and that's, he's trying to.
No. It's
support himself. And, you know, Arbeloa's, he's not doing great, is he, Arbeloa? Like, as a convincing tactician.
He's doing fine.
But, yeah. Like, they didn't win this game because of any tactical master plays or anything like that. Obviously, he's being asked a lot about Mbappe and stuff, like you mentioned. He says that they do know what the problem is with Mbappe, and that it's the knee, and he's not going to be talking any further about it. Ultimately, he'll just be really relieved, won't he, that they've got through. In a moment when, you know, it's not just Mbappe, it wasn't playing. There was Bellingham missing and Militao and Rodrigo, whatever. So that, you know.
Yeah, they're missing a number of key players.
There's
a team out there that you would expect to win this tie, especially with an advantage from the first leg, which they have gone and done, but perhaps not in the most convincing manner that we thought. But ultimately, that won't matter. And Real Madrid have got through scares in the Champions League before and looked like less cohesive a team and gone on and won the competition. So, yeah. You know, they have players to come back, and I have no doubt that they will still fancy their ability to find a way in this competition of all competitions. Yeah. If they play like that again, I think a better team will tear them apart.
It's there's some good quotes just coming out right now from Thibaut Courtois, and he was asked about his great save when he goes low and keeps it out. He says, my great save, well, it's a special technique where I have to remove my leg in order to drop immediately to the floor to make the save. I learned it at Chelsea, but I think it's in my DNA because my parents were volleyball players. That's quite a good point.
There you go.
There you go. Volleyball players have to get low to dig it out from the floor.
I don't know if it's on your DNA or you just played volleyball as a kid.
Yeah, it was a couple of years. I don't know. Like, he's mixed there. He said he learned it at Chelsea, but it's in his DNA and he should be playing volleyball. It's funny. Courtois and Arbeloa both say, oh, by the way, it's an absolute guarantee we're playing Man City in the next round.
Well, okay. I mean, I personally would quite like that, because it would mean that we get that Sporting but a glimpse tie that I'm kind of dreaming of. But I don't know. I'm not as confident as they are that that's the outcome.
They're absolutely adamant. They're not even questioning that it won't be. They're like, we get them every year. We're playing Man City.
Fair enough. I mean, look, they've provided serious entertainment as a pair of clubs that have come together in years gone by. But yeah, it was, as you say, Vinicius's night, and he's the one that buries Benfica after all of the noise that has gone on around this fixture. And as much as Jose Mourinho was trying, I think, to maybe nick the headlines with not going into the stadium. I think that this night should and will belong to Vinicius Jr. And that's a good place.
It's funny, isn't it? Because, like, I mean, Arbeloa himself says he hasn't seen Mourinho at the game today. But so when will Mourinho surface? When will we actually hit, like, tomorrow? Will he pop up? Will he have some thoughts?
No. We won't see him again until Benfica playing the Primeira at the weekend.
Yeah.
That'll be the next time I think we see Jose Mourinho.
I do think he's going to conjure up some, like...
No, I don't think he'll mention this game at all. Like, I think he actually just won't talk about it. And that in itself will annoy me. But it is what it is. Yeah. And these are the situations we find ourselves in. It's funny, isn't it? It was only a couple of weeks ago that we were talking and I was talking on the radio and lots of different conversations about the idea that Mourinho might actually be a better fit for a Real Madrid at this point right now than he has been in the previous 5-7 years. Because of the fact that the game has changed in terms of, you know, what we're seeing at the top level, the physicality, we're coming back round to that. And we've had these discussions. The idea of him returning to Real Madrid now seems like a distant fantasy, doesn't it? Those bridges, I think, have been officially burned. So it's funny how quickly the game changes. And that feels like one of them. Should we come on to the reigning champions, Dean? PSG, who had a 3-2 lead over Monaco from their first leg and went back home to the Parc des Princes, where Monaco have an absolutely abhorrent record, right? Monaco just do not win in Paris. It's one of those things. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of expecting this to be the damp squib. I was expecting this of all the four games to be the one that probably served up the least drama. I don't trust this Monaco side under Pocagnoli. They had a really good win at the weekend against Lens where they came from 2-0 down to win 3-2. And to be honest, in the first half of that game against PSG at home in the first leg, I thought they'd give a really good account of themselves before Golovin got sent off and the game sort of descended. And Desire Doué made a huge, huge impact on that game. So I wasn't expecting loads from this game. And then in the first 10-15 minutes, Monaco played really, really well. And they carved open a couple of opportunities. And I tell you what, Mamadou Koulibaly had a very, very chaotic night of football tonight. But he misses this chance, which is gilt-edged. And that's giving it a major understatement. The ball is played in to Magnus Akinyeche, who was absolutely brilliant pretty much all night long, I thought. Yeah. And what he does is he flicks the ball over. He draws the defender. He waits for the ball to kind of fall to him. And he just lobs it over to his mate, who's steaming into the box, 6 yard out. And Mamadou Koulibaly just lashes the ball over the bar from 6 yards with maybe not the goal gaping because there's a couple of defenders there, but it was harder not to score. The ball is coming up on him. It bounces and comes up on him. And I appreciate that it's hard to get your body over it, but you need to score this opportunity, especially when you are a Monaco side already losing to PSG in a place you don't win very often, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you're thinking, right, is that the moment? Is that the moment that Monaco had to really kind of put the cat amongst the pigeons in this game? And actually, it wasn't. They continued to create some good openings. And look, PSG created a little bit themselves. There's a moment where Barkley smashes one off the crossbar. It wasn't like Monaco were absolutely battering PSG, but they were well in the game. And actually, I thought the better of the opportunities, bar that Barkley one, fell Monaco's way. So Koulibaly did redeem himself slightly because he actually sets up the opener. The ball comes into the box, great work down the left, and he sort of plays this interesting sort of square pass from across rather than shooting directly into the path of Akinyeche, who strokes it home off the post. And you're thinking, okay, game on. Ends up 1-0 at halftime. Flo Balogun nearly executes one of the most beautiful chips you'll ever see, by the way, before halftime, but sadly drops on the wrong side of the crossbar. And I was talking to my friend Max at halftime, and he was like, PSG are like 1-8 on to qualify. The tie is currently level. And I was like, yeah, but Monaco never win in Paris. They have been the better team in the first half. I just don't trust them. Anyway, the second half kicks off, and about 5 minutes into it, Koulibaly gets sent off for a second yellow for a tackle on Achraf Hakimi. Now, I love Hakimi, but he might need an Oscar for this one. This is like the absolute briefest of touches, the slightest of knocks. And he goes over like in a double somersault, like he's been watching the snowboarding at the Winter Olympics. And Koulibaly is apoplectic, absolutely baffled that he's been sent off for this challenge, where he barely makes any contact. But the referee's decision, as you say, it's a second yellow card, so I can't really go to VAR on it, but it was incredibly harsh. And about 2 minutes after that, There is the equaliser then for PSG in the tie. Marquinhos puts them back in front in the tie. Marquinhos finishes off across from the right-hand side. And you're thinking, okay, they're back in front now. 5 minutes after that, there's a strike from the edge of the area that's parried, and Kvaratskhelia comes steaming in to fire it into the ground and over the keeper. And you're thinking, right, okay, 5-3 on aggregate. No way on earth with 10 men Monaco are coming back from this one. And to be honest, for like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, nothing happened. Monaco were just like, okay, we're probably going to lose this game. And then in the 91st minute, they started to go through the gears a little bit, and the ball falls somewhat fortuitously for Jordan Tezza, who finishes it off. And they're getting the ball, and there was 3 minutes of injury time. So he scored in the 91st minute. There was 3 minutes. You're thinking, why did Monaco not go for this a little bit earlier? This felt like, I can understand the decision with 10 men to basically be like, right, let's not get ourselves completely out of this. Let's just see what happens. But it felt like they just pressed the button and went through the gears like 5 minutes too late. Anyway, when they score this equaliser, you're thinking there's definitely not enough time for them to create another chance. PSG just knocked the ball around the back. They give away this wild foul, sort of about 35 yards out from goal, edge of the 18-yard box on the left-hand side. There's a huge drama. Monaco trying to make a substitution ahead of the free kick being taken. The clock's over the time at this point. Pocognoli is booked. The sub who's coming on is booked before he comes onto the pitch for coming onto the pitch too early. And you're thinking, what is going on? You've just ruined any momentum you have. But the delivery is inch perfect. And it falls to Wout Fies, who, you know, 3 months ago was playing for a team in Leicester who are in the relegation zone in the championship, is now playing as the European champions, which is wild in his own right, right? It forced him 6 yards out, and he has a completely free, unmarked header. I don't know what PSG are doing with defending this set piece, but they leave three Monaco players who've all onside, who've stepped off that final line and are all waiting for the cross to come in. It falls to Fass. And he does that thing, and the only way I can explain it is I've seen it so many times from so many players in like Sunday League, where he goes to head the ball and he sort of misses it. So it ends up glancing off the side of his head and dropping wide. So he like sort of misses it, sort of connects. And you're standing there going, the whole team are looking at him being like, really? Like free header, 6 yards out to take this game to extra time. Maybe he just didn't fancy another 30 minutes of PSG running at him relentlessly. But a massive opportunity to send this one into an extra 30, completely passed up. And Monaco gave a better account of themselves than I thought they were going to in this game. PSG sort of maybe squeaked through is a bit harsh. But you do look at it and think you really could have stuck your foot on Monaco's neck, and instead you allowed them that opportunity to push you to an extra 30 minutes for no real reason when you were in complete control of it. I'm still weirdly unconvinced by this PSG of this season, and I don't know at what point they feel like they're firmly going to click into gear.
Strange, isn't it? This is a strange old year, mate. Obviously, with the old Inter story yesterday, this would have been a turn up for the books too if PSG had gone as well. But at least from their perspective, I guess they've managed to keep their heads above water and they're in the mix for that next round. But there's things have to improve. Like the very best teams have to start realizing that like they can take nothing for granted anymore.
Well, it's PSG will get Chelsea or Barcelona in the next round.
Yeah,
and you would suggest that if they give, at the very least, this Barcelona attack the kind of chances that they offered up to Monaco today, and look, they will score more at the other end because Barcelona have their own flaws, sure. But you would expect them to really struggle if they play again like they did like that. But maybe they need that, you know, higher quality non-domestic opposition in order to raise their game. It's what happened last year, and perhaps this is the dawn for PSG, but I'm really struggling with getting on board with them. And I think in a year where there isn't an obvious candidate to go and be like, this team are 100% going to go and win it. Mm. Like, we know how good Bayern have been over the course of the domestic season. Arsenal obviously beat them in the league stage, but Arsenal are having their own kind of wobbles and frailties from a Premier League perspective. There is just a sort of sense that I don't really know who's going to go and take command of this tournament last year. Like, I felt like PSG were right in the ascendancy from the moment they got to the knockout stages, even if it was through the playoffs last year. I don't really feel that this year with any of these teams. And so your natural instinct is to be like, maybe the holders retain. I can't see PSG doing that with the way they're playing at the moment.
Yeah, it would be a surprise if they did manage to retain it for sure. And obviously, that's an extremely difficult thing to do anyway. But like, the signs aren't there right now. So yeah, we'll have to see what they manage to do from here on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right, we're going to take a little break there. And we come back on the other side. We're going to talk about two incredibly dramatic games involving the Serie A sides. We're going to talk about Atalanta hosting Borussia Dortmund and Galatasaray's trip to Juventus, both which served up goals in high, high numbers. Make sure you stick with us here on Champions League Takeaway. Welcome back to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. Jack Collins and Dean Jones with you. And Dean, I think we should probably go to Turin, where not many people were really giving Juventus a sniff, having been three goals down from the first leg away at Galatasaray, a game that they were firmly in until Juan Cabal got himself sent off for two yellow cards in quick succession in the second half in Istanbul, and Galatasaray firmly pressed the accelerator. But Juventus put in a performance tonight that they can be very, very proud of, even if ultimately they've come up short.
Yeah, I mean, you text me before the game, we're like, what games are you going to be focusing on? I'm like, well, obviously Madrid is the big one, but I'll also have an eye on the Juve game because they're going to force a comeback. And part of that's because they're Juve, but obviously they haven't been that good this season and they've been inconsistent. So there wasn't a true belief in them, but they did do it, you know, after 90 minutes, we're sitting there and it's 5-5. I think ultimately Juve will look back at the first leg and a 45-minute period that's cost them their inclusion in the Champions League this season. But they'll also consider themselves extremely unlucky. I think the Galatasaray mismanaged the game across the 90 minutes in Turin. I don't think they did a good job by any stretch of the imagination, particularly given that for, you know, almost the entirety of the second half, they were playing against 10 men. By that point, Juve were in front on the night. Locatelli had scored from the penalty spot. And then, yeah, 3 minutes into the second half, Lloyd Kelly gets the harshest red card of all time. Jumps in the air for a header, is landing, and the Galatasaray player that's competing with him for the header is beneath him because he's jumped higher, and he lands down his calf, but like literally isn't looking there, is just landing. Like, it's a fact that if you jump, you have to land. There's no way around that. And Lloyd Kelly lands on him, but he didn't even know anything about it. And he's given a red card. Genuinely, one of the most absurd red cards I've ever seen.
I think the farce was added to by the fact that it was originally given as a yellow card, which was Lloyd Kelly's second yellow.
Yeah.
And then he was sent off for that. And then the referee, because they can't check that, the referee was actually sent to the monitor to check if it was a red card, like a straight red card. And I think Lloyd Kelly was like, right, he's obviously going to go to the monitor and see that I've landed on him. And then he will rescind the yellow card. He wouldn't normally be able to check that. I think Lloyd Kelly is like, wow, I'm going to get away with one here.
Yeah.
Because what the referee is going to do is obviously going to see what's happened here and rescind it. And instead, the referee comes back onto the pitch, rescinds the second yellow card, and then gives him a straight red card for it. And it was just like, we've just wasted a full 5 minutes.
Oh,
what was the point checking it if the only thing you were going to do from that was give him a straight red card because he was sent off anyway?
Yeah.
So the whole thing made absolutely no sense. It's incredibly harsh. I think the yellow card for it is also harsh, but like
it's
a little bit more,
you could get
a bit more understandable.
Yeah, it's understandable.
Right? Come back and give him a straight red card for that is one of the worst decisions. I mean, not that it mattered, I suppose, but it just feels so incredibly weird to have seen that play out in real time and be like, yeah, that's the conclusion that they came to. I just don't know what he's supposed to do there. And we've had instances of players landing on another player when a player has sort of put their leg under them, you know, and then they've stood there over the course of this season already, right? I just don't understand what you're supposed to do if you are in the air and a player puts his leg under you. What's the, you know, what's the answer
Apparently
to that?
You've got to disappear. You've got to disappear. Your legs need to... But do what Courtois said. What did he say? He removed his leg as he dived through. You have to remove your leg as you land from a header.
Start doing volleyball landings, mate.
Volleyball lessons for all. Anyway, to Juventus' credit, they dig deep and they pull themselves onto level terms. Gatti prods one in on 70 minutes, and then Weston McKennie, left back for the day, manages to score a header. I'll be honest, it's not great work from the goalkeeper. He's nowhere to be seen. But Cope Miners puts one back across the goal and McKennie's there to nod it in. And
suddenly, I saw the most incredible stat about Weston McKennie earlier on today. It was from Opta Paolo. Weston McKennie, he scored his 10th goal today in the Champions League. He becomes the third Juventus midfielder to score at least 10 goals in the Champions League or the European Cup. Do you reckon you can name the other two? We're talking some big names here. In fact, we're definitely talking two Ballon d'Or winners.
Go on then.
Michel Platini.
Okay.
And Pavel Nedved.
Blimey.
That's elite company.
That really is. That is from the Hall of Fame, isn't it? That's nice. I like that a lot. Honestly, at that point, they looked like there'd only be one winner. And if the game hadn't have been forced into another 30 minutes of play, it would have been Juve's game. As I say, Galatasaray had been poor. They'd mismanaged the game. And even when we look back beyond what unravels in extra time, Juve all consider themselves extremely unlucky. I mean, Juve had 28 shots. Bear in mind, they've had 10 men since the 48th minute. 28 shots on goal.
A 5XG.
Like, 8 big chances. I guess in the end, tired legs. It doesn't help, obviously. Osimhen.
How some of these chances were missed, though, at the end of the 90 minutes.
The Grover's chance is a...
The Grover's one is really bad. Do you know what happened? So Don Hutchinson was on the commentary here in the UK. I don't know who you had in the US. But they basically were like, I don't understand why Weston McKennie hasn't shot. And my immediate reaction to that is, how is Weston McKennie catching flak here for putting the ball on a plate the player's steaming in? That is, and they kept going back to it. And look, I love Adam Summerton as a commentator, right? I think he's absolutely brilliant. But I just didn't understand.
That's not the story in that moment, yeah.
Like the story wasn't Weston McKennie should have shot. They were like, he's already got a goal. You know, he should be confident. He's got his back to goal. He lays it out for the player steaming in. There is no one that can take flak for that. And actually, I tell you what, Shagrova had a brilliant game today, and I haven't seen him have all that many brilliant games in the Juventus shirt. I thought he was really, really impressive when he came on. I thought Jeremy Boga was excellent on the other wing when he came on. There were a lot of players who really did have good games today, and Juve ran themselves into the absolute ground, right? They couldn't have done much more. And I do think that ultimately the game got away from them because with 10 men, they eventually ran out of steam. But there were moments towards the end of the 90. There's the one from Kenan Yildiz that hits the post, the ball that's delivered in from that left-hand side, and he's sliding in at the back stick, and he somehow just doesn't quite get enough on it, and it hits the post. There's a couple of scratches in the box. There's a Zagrova one where he dives inside two players. There's a brilliant save in injury time where Zagrova cuts inside again right towards the end when it's actually Galatasaray have the 6-5 lead before they score the killer goal. And it's a wonderful, wonderful save from the keeper that keeps him out. But Juve and the amount they created and the distance they covered with 10 men, this was a proper performance. And actually, even in defeat, I thought it was really interesting that they were given a standing ovation after the Galatasaray goal that sealed it. The entire crowd came back to life because they'd been a bit gutted, I think, by the Osimhen goal, which is totally reasonable, right? But they literally stood up after that goal and the entire stadium was on their feet applauding. And it was the same at the full-time whistle. That's a performance, I think, that Juventus really needed, even if the result hasn't gone their way.
Yeah, I think they needed to know that the crowd are still with them as well. I think that was important. But, you know, they would have been hoping that Galatasaray wouldn't make the most of this extra man that they had. And most of the evidence across the game was that they were too wasteful. They were getting the overloads and they weren't taking advantage of it. But then it's one moment. Boga actually is the guy that gives the ball away. And Galatasaray do get their moment. Osimhen peels off the shoulder of Gatti. And in that moment, in that area, there is pretty much no one better in the game to be steering that into the back of the net than Victor Osimhen. Sticks it away. It's the 105th minute. It's a massive moment. And as you say, then Yilmaz manages to settle things on 118 minutes and it really is game over. The worrying thing, and I think partly one of the reasons that the Juve fans reacted the way that they did is because this team, like this goes down as obviously a eventually a defeat for Juve. And it's now a long time, actually, since this team won a game. Like, they are in a really bad run of form. They lost to Como 2-0 at the weekend. Obviously, they lost
the first at the weekend, but Como were also absolutely brilliant. They were fluid as...
They lost the first leg of this one 5-2. They lost 3-2 to Inter. They drew 2-2 with Lazio. They lost 3-0 to Atalanta in the Coppa Italia. So their last win was against Parma ages ago. And this weekend, they play against Roma. So it's I think it's a moment when everybody needed to come together and say, look, lads, hold your heads up high, because like that is actually an unbelievable performance. Last night, I'm kind of battering Newcastle for an easy win. And tonight I'm giving credit to Juve for a defeat. But this is the way that football works sometimes.
But they didn't actually lose tonight. They did actually win the game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But they've lost the tie. And ultimately, that's... It was weird watching the players come off, because they were disappointed and they were probably angry, but they hadn't really let themselves down. Osimhen didn't really even celebrate his goal, because I think...
Well, I saw this. There's a couple of things. I saw James Benge tweet about it. It was CBS. He said, Osimhen was surely the first ever case of not celebrating against a club you might have liked to have joined in the past and would probably go to if the opportunity presents itself again. I'm not sure it's that. I think Victor Osimhen was just really, really angry with how the rest of his team had performed over the course of this game. And I tell you what, it was very, very bleak watching Leroy Sané play in this game. Leroy Sané looks a million miles off the pace and a million miles from the player that we knew and loved.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I was in one of my WhatsApp groups. Someone said, why is Osimhen not celebrating? I was like, he's annoyed. He doesn't want to be playing extra time. They came into this game 5-2 up. The other team's had a man sent off. They've been down to 10 men.
It was 1-0 at halftime to Juventus. It was 5-3 in the tie, and then they went down to 10 men. You do not want to be playing 30 minutes.
Yeah, he's like, why am I wasting my time out here? Feed the goat and he'll score. And anyway, Osimhen did take his chance. And I thought it was actually quite brave of Yilmaz to take the other one off him as well, because in that moment, it's just going to show how much Yilmaz rates himself, that he's happy to stick that one away when Osimhen is literally on his shoulder ready to convert it, and Osimhen has to leave it to him because he had to score, and he sticks it straight through keeper's legs.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it was incredibly dramatic, right, in terms of how it was. And actually, I thought the Barisal Piers, Yo-Yo Mats, had a pretty poor go of it up to that point. Like, I really did think he hadn't been particularly effective. He'd given the ball away a lot. And then he obviously plays the slide rule pass through for Osimhen, which is a brilliant ball to score that one, and then puts the game away. So he redeemed himself at the end. I didn't think it was a particularly brilliant performance from him, but you know, he's ultimately come up good at the end, which is, you know, huge credit to his own self-belief. And in terms of making sure that you do get that job done, he's the one that ultimately seals it for Galatasaray. But yeah, I mean, look, you're right. In terms of Juve, this was weird. I think from a Gala perspective, they'll obviously be delighted. It's been 12 years since they were in the round of 16 of the Champions League. So it's been 12 years since any Turkish team was in there, and it was them. So they will look at this and be like, okay, this is a good moment. And considering the home performance, especially after Juve went down to 10, they will still fancy themselves. They've had a good campaign. They beat Liverpool in this campaign in a very impressive performance. They will look at this as an opportunity, but I think that we also saw a lot of their frailties tonight, and that will be a huge worry for them going into this moment, because it's felt like they, you know, it really should have been cruise control, you know, with three goal advantage, and especially when you've still got a two goal advantage and you're going, you know, up a man at that moment, you should be able to just knock the ball around and chill out. And I don't know how much of this can even go on the manager in terms of how it falls, because you're looking at it and thinking, well, these players are just losing their heads every time they have the ball. And you know, Sané was maybe the biggest outlet of that, because he just couldn't hold on to it. And every touch seemed to be coming off his heel, or he'd fall over, or he'd give the ball away. But there are a lot of players doing that against a team that have a man less than you. Knock the ball around, tire them out. And ultimately, you know, that is what happened at the end of the game when it went to extra time. You shouldn't have had to get to that point. And actually, I think the people who would be most delighted with this result, I think that Gala will be pleased they're through, but a bit frustrated with how they did it. Juventus will be pleased with the performance, but frustrated that they're out. I'll tell you who'll be loving that: Roma.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, Galatasaray got away with one, really, because you say he was such a commanding position, and very, very close to throwing it away. But whatever, they're through. Well done, Galatasaray. Let's see what happens next.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we can guarantee drama and goals, whoever Galatasaray end up drawing in the round of 16. Which takes us on to the final game. And, you know, after all of that, after Inter falling out yesterday, there was a lot of chat about Serie A being down in the dumps, about Calcio being finished, in inverted commas. Yeah. I think that, one, a lot of that conversation was nonsense because you can't judge a game on... Look, I heard this, you know, Musa and Ryan talking about this on Sadio, and I think they made a really good point about it. All of us want fairy tale stories in football, right? We all want these stories like Bodo Glimt getting through and knocking out the big boys and bloodying noses. And then as soon as it happens, we're like, wow, Serie A's finished. Right? Those two things don't add up. You can't have a team who you're falling over to praise yourselves. And actually, I thought that, you know, Manuel Akanji did an interview afterwards. It was really good. He was like, is it bad or is it embarrassing for you to lose to a team like Bodo Glimt? He was like, what do you mean? Like, was it a team like Bodo Glimt? Did you see them? They were unbelievable for two legs. They were so good. Like, I will not have that disrespect. I take offense at your question. I was like, wow, that's really good. I'm really pleased about that. But I think that, you know, it fell on kind of tonight to be like, right, how do the Serie A sides respond? Because there is going to be a discussion if all of them are knocked out. Obviously, all of them lost last week in the first leg. Who's going to step up and carry it? And as we say, there hasn't been an edition of the Champions League since it became the Champions League in 1993, that there hasn't been a team from Serie A in the last 16. And so the question was going to be, who is going to step up and make that? And, you know, we thought it could be a Juve, like, comeback for the ages that very nearly came true. But it actually turned out it was Atalanta in Bergamo who won 4-1 against Borussia Dortmund to overhaul that 2-0 loss at the Westfalenstadion and, you know, make themselves the sole representative of Serie A in the last 16. And you know what, Dean? This was such a brilliant performance from Atalanta. They came out of the blocks like a shot. They take that early goal that Scamacca gets in. Terrible night for Remy Bensabayini, for what it's worth. Nothing he tried. And I've been a huge proponent of this Kovac switch to Bensabayini as part of the back three. I think it's really helped Dortmund in terms of the way that they build up. I think he's, you know, for someone who was a flying fullback, to reinvent himself as part of this back three has been a really impressive moment in his career and a real kind of feather in his cap. This was not his finest night by any stretch of the imagination. He's the one that flicks the cross into the path of Scamacca for the first goal. And it gives the stadium so much life, so much hope. And Atalanta are banging on the door in this first half. And they finally get the second goal that really took the roof off the place, that kind of set the tie level on aggregate just before the break. And you know what? I didn't think I'd be watching a Davide Zappacosta masterclass in the Champions League in big 2026. But here he was, you know, popping up at the edge of the box. Yes, the strike takes a deflection, but he'd been excellent in the first half, had drawn the foul, drawn the yellow card from Bensabayini early on by bursting down the flank and beating him to a ball. He looked 10 years younger here watching this game. And it was really nice to see him kind of flying again. But Atalanta was such good value for their performance in the first half. They were good value to have the tie level at the break. And, you know, straight after the break, Mario Pasalic rises highest ahead in a beautiful cross. And it's, you know, thinking, wow, is there any way back for Borussia Dortmund in this game? They had spells and they did look dangerous occasionally on the break. But it was only really with the introduction of Karim Adeyemi that they started to make real hay in the Atalanta half. Now, he scores the goal, but he'd also really stretched the game. And it's lovely footwork in the area for him to kind of shift it out of his feet and curl one in. And at that point, it could have gone anywhere, right? Like, there are chances at both ends. But in the chaos of extra time, there is yet more drama to come. Just as we think we're getting 30 minutes extra of this one, there's a terrible clearance from Gregor Kobel, who I thought had mostly a pretty good game.
Yeah, this was bad.
It falls to Pasalic and he tries to lift the ball over for Nikola Krstović, who'd come on for Scamacca and done a really good job running the channels, I thought, to head it in. Bensabayini goes to try and clear the ball with sort of a scissor kick kind of thing. And he connects pretty much bang smack with the head of Krstović just as he clears the ball. So there's two things at play here. And people are saying he gets the ball. What's he supposed to do? The striker is stooping to head it in.
No.
Krstović has a massive gash in the middle of his forehead that is dripping blood. And whilst people will say, well, he's got the right to go for the ball, etc., if your foot is high and you connect, I'm afraid that that's kind of the way of it, right? Like, it just feels like one of those moments that you can't really do loads about. And whilst I feel a bit for Ben Sabayini, because he clearly isn't trying to kick him in the head, right? He knows, but it is an act of desperation. 100%. But he also does kick him in the head. His foot is high and there's blood pouring from Kurstovic's face. But I don't think, by the time the ref goes over to the monitor to look at it, I don't think he has much choice but to award
it's
the penalty.
Pen.
And ultimately, that's exactly what he does. Samardzic, absolutely perfect penalty, by the way. Like, top corner of the goal, into the roof of the net, takes the roof off the place. The ref just blows the whistle. He's like, yeah, that's done. We're done here. Yeah. Thanks very much. Thanks for coming. In the chaos of the aftermath, Schlotterbeck, who didn't get off the bench, is sent off. Ben Sabayini is sent off for a second yellow for that tackle or that foul on Kurstovic. So there's drama kind of left, right, and center at that point. But Atalanta, I thought, were more than value for getting through in this game. They took it to Dortmund from the first minute. They had some really impressive performances kind of across the board. I thought that Lorenzo Bernasconi, who plays as the left wing back, 22 years old, has been sensational. He was plucked from, I think he was playing it with the Atalanta C team in the summer, or at the very least with the reserves. But I think it was lower than that. And he was plucked from there in the summer, brought into the first team pickup. And I think that since Palladino's come in, he has been a absolute sensation down that left-hand side. But the way he delivers the ball for the first goal, his ability to get back and defend is so impressive as well. Really, really like him, having a wicked breakthrough campaign. And it was, I think that he should probably get his flowers because he was a big catalyst in what happened here. But Martin De Roon, the old warhorse in the middle of the park, absolutely brilliant. I thought that Pasalic was brilliant. And I thought that Scamacca led the line really, really well. A load of players really, you know, fought their own corner. Isaac Hien in the center of the defense was excellent. Scalvini was excellent. And Karnesecki in goal. Just a really good all-round performance from pretty much everyone in a black and blue striped shirt. And Atalanta march into the round of 16 with a newfound confidence that wouldn't have been there a couple of weeks ago, I don't think.
Yeah, exactly. I always hope that Dortmund's frailties are gone in terms of mindset. And I hope we never have to talk about it again on this podcast. But every single season, it comes back up. It's a bit, I don't know what German is for Spursy, but that's what Dortmund seem to have in them, right?
No one really had a good game bar Kerbel, and that's not a particularly good sign. Brandt fought hard, I thought. Emre Can
obviously did well when he came on.
Adeyemi did well when he came on, yeah. But no starter. Yeah. Bar Kerbel, maybe Brandt.
That's not okay, is it? That's not okay.
What's testament, though, to how good Atalanta
was? Yeah, I mean, absolutely, not to take away from them. It's just such a big game for Dortmund. You're in such a decent position at the start of the night that that's hugely frustrating for them. Let's see if they can redress things once they get back into domestic action.
Yeah, I mean, look, they play Bayern at the weekend, so we'll see. And maybe they'll be glad that this didn't go to extra time in the end, that they can save a little bit of the legs for
bring the title race to life, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those. But, you know, Palladino's done a wonderful job since taking over Atalanta, and he should be given his flowers for what has been a very, very good turnaround, a season that looked in danger of spiralling out of control. He's brought it back there, and I think that, you know, considering how good a job he did with Fiorentina and where Fiorentina are right now, and to take that then into an Atalanta side which has heaps of talent, but, you know, feels like it's in a stage of regeneration a little bit. I was very, very pleased for Palladino. But yeah, I thought both home teams would win their legs in this one, but I thought that Dortmund at 2-0 up would have done enough to gotten through. So very impressive from Atalanta to turn that round. And with that, Dean, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day. That's all games covered. Thank you as ever for listening to this episode of Champions League Takeaway on Ranks FC. A massive thanks as ever to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. We hope you all have enjoyed these two episodes this week. There will be a truth out on Friday, which is talking about the Premier League relegation battle and discussing that kind of question that's on everyone's lips at the moment. Are Spurs actually in the relegation dogfight? And what does the season look like from here? So make sure you're locked in to the channel for that one that will drop early on Friday morning, UK time at the very least. But we appreciate all of you, Rank Squad, and we'll see you all very, very shortly. Take it easy. Peace.